Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.
And finally on the program tonight, Markets and Company News. It's a Thursday evening. That means Simon Brown from Just One Lap. Simon, let's start with Bidvest, selling Bidvest Bank. The price tag there, 2.8 billion rand. We know that this is has been on the cards for some time. What do we know about Access Bank that has bought it?
So Access Bank, evening Jeremy, is quite the little bank. It goes all the way back to the 1940s, Bank of Athens in South Africa. And it really was then designed to be for the Greek community, particularly the SME community. 2018, they did a deal with Agri, which used to be listed, and a few others. They became the Grow Bank. And then they were purchased by Access Bank in 2021. So there's a strong South African heritage to it. Access Bank in of itself is Nigerian, about 20 years old since it first started operations. But whilst it is a Nigerian bank that started in Nigerian head office, I suppose we could say, in Nigeria, it operates quite a fair bit across the continent. And it really is trying to be your one-stop banking solution into the African continent. Now, hugely competitive space. We've got Standard Bank, Absa, and others operating across the continent as well. But they pretty much say, look, you know what? There's 50-plus countries in the continent, regulations galore. We can help you with that process. And I got to say, I think the acquisition of Bidvest Bank really does help bulk them up in South Africa, which, of course, is a critical economy within the broader African continent.
Simon, why did Bidvest lose its appetite for its bank?
I think it's quite weird, right? Because we've got new banks popping up. We've got Time, we've got Zero, we've got Discovery, we've got Old Mutual coming next year. Everyone wants to get a new bank. And then there's some folks who are just saying, thanks, but no. Sasfin, Grindrod, two cases in point more recently. And the trick with banking is that post the 2008 financial crisis, we got the new Basel III regulations that have basically been phased in over about a decade. They fully introduced by 2020, and that significantly increases capital requirements. It significantly increases your compliance. So banking has become capital heavy and expensive. And for a company like Bidvest, they look at the money which is tied up in the bank and think, you know what, we could do so much more with that in a non-banking environment, and you know, put it into our operations, put it into working capital, for example. So we're seeing a lot of sort of non-core banking operations say, nope, we're moving away from it. And then companies such as Access Bank say, yeah, this is our focus. This is what we do.
Simon, yesterday, Barloworld share price up by just over 15%. It's at 110 Rand 98 on my screen at the moment. That's up about 3.75%. It closed last night at 107 Rand. But there are some questions around this whole deal, aren't there?
There are questions. The first is that so the offer is from the Saudi Arabian company. They about 6, 8, maybe 10 years ago took a fairly chunky stake in Barloworld, but the CEO is part of the acquiring NewCo, as they're currently calling it. And the question around that is, well, he really should have recused himself from that process. We can now say, oh, it's a great price, it's a good deal, and all of those bits, but there really is a sense that he was kind of on both sides of it, and that can't be considered correct by any stretch of imagination. There is still also the potential Russian sanctions issue. Earlier in the year, Barloworld, I think it was back in October, if memory serves, late September, Barloworld said that they had potentially breached Russian sanctions. They had basically confessed to the US government, and now they would see what would happen from that. There is a chance, I think it is a very slim chance, there is a chance that that could derail the entire deal. There is a break clause in the contract around that Russian sanctions. I just think that quite probably it's not going to be material, and frankly, the deal might conclude before we get anything out of the US authorities.
Inflation numbers were out yesterday. It's inched up ever so slightly, but we shouldn't be too worried about another rate cut.
Absolutely. I think our next rate cut it will be in January, and I think it's absolutely a lock-in. Of course, we've still got the US next week. We've got the Bank of Japan next week. But I think regardless what happens in those two markets, although Japan is actually looking to hike, the US probably going to cut a quarter, I think we'll get another 0.25%. The 2.8 for October, 2.9% for November, both at outside the range and outside to the bottom end of the range, certainly gives the MPC, I think, comfort. And I don't think we're going to get a lot of rate cuts next year. I don't think we're going to see prime coming crashing down. But it does mean that at this point, the inflation trajectory is keep it low, but the risks to inflation remain to the upside with geopolitical tensions, Trump taking power next month. There's still risks, but I think a January rate cut, pretty certain of that.
Simon, every time I look at Bitcoin's figures, I feel the need to take a bit of Dramamine because it closed yesterday at $101,619 US dollars. It's now $100,302, so still above the key 100,000 mark, but down 1.3% today. And you've just got to live with the volatility if you're playing in the space, I guess.
Oh, yes. If you are, I mean, to put this into perspective, Jeremy, back in September, which was not that long ago, Bitcoin traded just above 50,000. In other words, it has doubled in that period, and it can just as quickly halve in that period. I mean, the way I manage my very small Bitcoin holding is I bought it, I have it in a hardware wallet, and I just leave it alone. Bitcoin will be immensely volatile. It will probably end up at either a million or zero at some point in the next decade or two, but volatility is the name of the game. Bitcoin's almost like a geared option on equity markets. In other words, if equity markets are going up, it goes up, but a whole lot faster. And of course, when they're going down, it goes down, but a whole lot faster.
Talking about equity markets, and Simon, this is our last conversation for the year. We'll pick it up again after the 6th of January. But where is your head in terms of stock and maybe sectoral picks for next year? Anything that we should keep our eye out for?
Jeremy, I'm still – so two parts to the answer. The first is the U.S. equity markets are expensive. There's just no way around that. They are expensive. Can they do – you know, this is now the second year of around 30% returns for the S&P and the NASDAQ. Can they do that 3 years in a row? Sure, but likely, I think not. So my focus really has been on SA Inc. And in fact, I've just done a presentation just putting the case forward on SA Inc. And it is never without risk. Make no mistake. And of course, if things go horribly wrong in politics and wars around the world, we will follow everyone else downward. But I think there is still some really good value in our SA Inc. And listeners will be saying, oh, but Mr. Price, for example, has doubled in value and in 1 year. It has, but it's just doubled in value to its sort of long-term fair value. It's not expensive. There's a lot of value here. We've seen the two-pot money come through. We got retail sales out yesterday, plus 6%. That was a giant number. The money has been spent. Rates are coming down. The GNU is working. And perhaps best of all, Eskom as well.
And I think that is a very good place to put a punctuation point on. Thank you so much from Mr. Price to Mr. Brown. Appreciate your time tonight, Simon. We'll pick it up in the new year and have a good festive season.
Always my pleasure. You too.
Heart Business on Heart 1027 with MoneyWeb.